We have been exploring creativity this hour, and to close the show, we'll look at where it probably begins, with children and their imaginations. When I was a little kid, 3, 4, 5, I had a whole bunch of imaginary friends. The main one, I remember, was called Robbie Dobby. There was also Cracker Pin and Jimmy the Cat, later a poodle called Genevieve. I practically could have populated a book. And now, as an adult, I do populate books with make-believe characters who I know aren't real but do feel pretty real to me as I'm writing about them. Psychologists are looking at childhood imaginary friends to try and figure out what they're good for. Studio 360's Jessica Benko talked with one of those researchers, Marjorie Taylor at the University of Oregon.
When I first started doing work on imaginary friends, I kept wanting to find the typical imaginary friend. And it was frustrating because every study, almost every friend was different from every other. So they could be a little tiny fly on your shoulder, they could be a giant penguin, they could be an army of Martians, etc., etc.
I saw a drawing of yours that had a bunch of your friends on it that you drew, and you put all their names. So who are all these guys?
These are some of my imaginary friends.
This is Maxine. I talked to her a few months ago when she was 7, about to turn 8.
Can you tell me a little bit about them?
I like Ben. He's like an eyeball about this big.
About an inch wide.
He has no arms and legs, so he just rolls around, and he's really friendly. I like Grababi. He does have arms and legs.
Grababi looks kind of like a wobbly starfish.
He's just one of the smallest ones. He's like about that big. He likes to play ball games where he's a ball.
And what's his name?
Invisible Guy. You can only see his clothes, and he's invisible, so he doesn't have to wear a lot of clothes, so all he wears is boots.
He needs the boots to protect his imaginary feet, of course.
And then you can't see the outside, but you can see the inside, so his tongue counts as the inside, so you can see it.
Can you see, like, what's inside his stomach and stuff?
No, because his invisible skin is covering.
Who else is there? Can you tell me a little bit more about some of these guys?
This is Fugat, and he's just like this ghost kind of guy, but he's always so happy because he has a big smile on his face. Betjibu is kind of like a gun, but he's orange, and he shoots yellow bullets. But he can shoot anything. He can shoot ice cream, and the bullets are candy bullets. It matters what you're scared of. Like, if you're scared of weapons, you might be scared of Betjibu. They're not the kind of people that will go and, like, kill people. They're not, like, gangsters, but they're, like, just tricksters. If they did that to me, then they would be deleted. Because then you don't exist. It's, like, the only way you can die. Sometimes when I forget about them, they die, but they're not deleted. It's like just falling to sleep for a really long time, and you're not conscious.
Marjorie Taylor's been studying kids like Maxine for more than 15 years, trying to figure out if they're different from other kids.
Imaginary friends, when they appear in movies, they tend to be associated with the child who's shy and maybe doesn't have enough real friends or has gone through some kind of trauma, maybe is a little confused about fantasy and reality, all these things.
Movies like Donnie Darko, The Orphanage, The Shining.
Tony, I'm scared. Remember what Mr. Halloran said? It's just like pictures in a book, Danny. It isn't real.
But the kids she looked at seemed perfectly fine.
It's not a problem of distinguishing fantasy and reality for these children. They know the difference. They tend to be more social, be less shy. They do better on tasks which require you to take the perspective of another person in real life. So we found that they are more creative on some kinds of tasks. Other people have found that their narratives are richer.
Taylor and her grad students started with preschoolers, some who had imaginary friends and some who didn't. They would tell them the beginning of a story, and then the child would have to finish it.
So we told a story about two children walking in the woods, and they see a key on the path, and they look at each other and say, I wonder if it's magic. And then we turn to the child and say, can you tell us what happens next? Some children will say, well, she took the key and showed it to her mom, and that's the end. Other kids will say, well, the key fits into that door over there in the tree, and you open the door in the tree and you go in, and then all kinds of things happened. There's a bunch of snakes.
They found that kids with imaginary friends were showing more creativity on tests like this. Taylor got interested in children who invent whole worlds of imaginary friends, paracosms.
Whole country or place where children think about all kinds of things like the entertainment, you think about the transportation system, you make coins. There are a lot of artifacts associated with having a paracosm, and that's part of the fun.
They have different languages, and they each know every one of them. And my first one is unique, and it's just a bunch of, like, loops, and it's kind of like in cursive, but it doesn't really look like letters. It's just, like, loops and swirls and stuff like that. And then ta is just lines. It can be squiggly lines and tall lines and short lines and fat lines, and they can just be all kinds of lines. And you can't really speak ta, but they use it for writing. They mostly speak unique in English.
It's so tempting to speculate that kids with paracosms, with these very active imaginations, are the future creatives among us, the writers, the artists, the inventors, the geniuses. It feels right.
Have you ever thought about what you might want to do when you grow up?
Well, I want to be an artist or maybe a musician or something like that.
But we don't really know. Taylor wants to continue her study to see how the kids do in school and what they achieve as adults. But the kids are 8, 9, 10 years old now, and she'll probably retire before they hit the peak of whatever they do. I'm pretty sure Maxine will be up to something interesting.
Have you ever thought about why you have imaginary friends and not everybody else does?
I think that some people think it's like for babies, and some people like just don't have them. Some people don't have as good imagination. Sometimes I wish that other people could see my imaginary friends.
Who's your favorite?
Devil Man. He lives over there. And he lives like everywhere inside the lamp. He's in there right now. If you want, I can maybe get him out of there because he might want to come out. Hello. Actually, you can see that he's a nice person and just that he has all these creepy things in his house. Because you can be nice and like scary things.
Do you ever think that you won't have your imaginary friends anymore?
I might delete a lot of them, but I'm always going to have Devil Man. I just realized Devil Man went back to the lamp.
You can see Maxine's doodles of Devil Man and Betcheboo and all the rest at studio360.org. Jessica Benko reported our story, with production by Ann Hepperman and original music by Jason Cady.